You're listening to the Hippie Haven podcast, where we have in-depth conversations about everything related to ethical and eco-friendly living, including zero waste, veganism, sustainable business, community activism, and more. If this is your first episode, I'm your host, Callie. I'm the owner of Bestowed Essentials, a line of natural plastic-free home goods with an online shop and a brand new storefront in Rapid City, South Dakota. I travel the country in a camper van, hence my blog name, ahippieinavan.com, and you can also find me on Instagram, at ahippieinavan, to follow along on all my adventures. I want to take a quick minute or two to highlight some of the incredible things that happened around the world in 2018. It seemed like such a long, intense year, and it was, but we made great strides towards improving the planet that are important to remember as we continue forward. In 2018, France was the first country to ban supermarkets from throwing away excess food. They now must donate unused food or face a fine. Scotland was the first country to give free sanitary products to female students and low-income women. California was the first state to ban beauty products tested on animals. Norway was the first country to ban all palm oil-based biofuel in order to protect the rainforests. Portugal banned the use of wild animals in circuses by 2024. Russia banned petting zoos, animal fights, and the killing of stray dogs and cats. The EU banned throwaway plastics, including styrofoam and single-use straws. Women in Saudi Arabia can now legally drive. India's Supreme Court decriminalized consensual gay sex. In the U.S., the midterm election saw the highest voter turnout in a century, with over half of all eligible voters casting a ballot. The world overall added nearly 30% more solar energy capacity. Breast cancer deaths have decreased by 39%, saving the lives of 322,600 women. Patagonia donated their $10 million in Trump's corporate tax cuts to environmental organizations. And looking ahead, there's 3 million more people expected to go vegan this year. A single individual eating a vegan diet for 1 year saves over 400,000 gallons of water, 14,600 pounds of grain, 10,950 square feet of forest, 7,300 pounds of CO2, and 365 animal lives. So times those numbers by 3 million, and it is truly a remarkable step in protecting the environment. And back to our regularly scheduled program. This is our second episode in 2019. If you missed last week's with EcoBag CEO Sharon Rowe, that was all about starting a tiny business that makes a difference in the world. Today's episode features Nicole Lindsay and Timothy Paul, the co-founders of Detroit Hives, a nonprofit on the east side of Detroit, Michigan, where they transform vacant city lots into urban bee farms for the conservation of honeybees and the education of their local schools and communities about bees and their contributions to our environment. Tell me about Detroit Hives and what it is that you do.
Detroit Hives is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, whereby we transform Detroit vacant lots into urban bee farms for the education and conservation of bees.
Very nice. And how did that get started?
Well, it got started all because Timothy got sick with a cold that he couldn't get rid of, and he had tried everything to get rid of it. Long story short, somebody had recommended that he use local raw honey to combat his cold. So we actually purchased some of the honey that was there in the store, and it actually worked. So when it worked, we started looking at the medicinal properties of honey and all of the benefits of it. And that's when we started looking into honeybees and how they made honey. And from there, I had an idea of let's make honey extremely local and raw and bring it to the city of Detroit. So we already had in our mind that we wanted to transform vacant lots. We just didn't know until what, until he got a cold and we started looking up the medicinal properties of honey and the importance of honeybees.
And what are some of the healing benefits of honey?
So it's really good for those who have allergies. Honey, it acts as immunotherapy, and bees go out and they'll fly out foraging for nectar and pollen. When they forage for the nectar and pollen, there's actually medicinal flowers that they visit. And these flowers could also be some of the flowers that people are allergic to as well. So when you're consuming the honey that has the nectar and the pollen from those things, flowers that you're allergic to, what it does is act like a flu shot, and your body becomes more immune to that, what you're allergic to. Another healing property is that it's good for wounds and cuts as well. So when you have a cut or a scratch, with honey, it is antifungal and antibacterial. So when you place it on a wound or a cut, it actually protects it and heals it from any bacteria or infection or any fungus.
Wow.
It's also good for eczema. If you have real raw local honey and you're a diabetic, it can regulate your blood sugar as well. There's plenty of beauty reasons to use it as well. It's good for locking in moisture within the hair and the skin, healing the scalp if you have like dandruff and things like that. And it has many more medicinal properties to it.
And with Detroit Hives, why did you choose specifically to work on vacant lots?
Well, Detroit is filled with 90,000 vacant lots. We always know we want to do something with the vacant lot and try to repair, rebuild, revitalize our community. But it wasn't until he got sick with the cold that we wanted to bring Detroit Hives to vacant lots in an urban apiary. Me and Timothy, especially both of us, weren't exposed to bees or beekeeping. So we wanted to educate the community about their importance and expose people of all ages to the importance of honeybees.
And can you explain a little bit about what is urban blight and how, in your experience, community members can do something about it besides obviously starting their own bee farms?
So urban blight or blight, what it is vacant land and abandoned homes that have been overtaken in neighborhoods. Where they've been abandoned and destroyed and now used as dumping grounds throughout the neighborhood and the city. It becomes an extreme eyesore. At our property, it was filled with tons of treasures like tires and couch cushions, you name it. All types of trash was on there. It became a huge dumping ground for that area. So what we wanted to do is, you know, transform and revitalize that community, bring back pride into that neighborhood by revitalizing it and placing bees there and just beautifying that area. And I think what people can do is they can do the same thing. So we have a partnership with Detroit Land Bank. And allows for residents and nonprofits to purchase these vacant lots that are in the city. So if you're a resident and you stay right next to a vacant land, you can go through the Detroit Land Bank and purchase that side lot for $100. That is a great way that they're trying to eliminate all these vacant lots in the city. So you can transform it into maybe a community space for the neighborhood, or attach it to your home and have a larger backyard, or create a urban farm where you can grow your fresh local foods. So it's many ideas that you can do with a vacant lot and help bring back your community and your neighborhood.
Now, to touch on a lot of vacant lots that we have in the city of Detroit, and I'm sorry, this is Tim speaking, the other half of Detroit Hives.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going? One great thing about vacant lots is that you have so many native plants and wildflowers that are growing on these vacant lots, and no one is sparing any of these wildflowers or weeds. And what most people will see or will say about these vacant lots, no one is spraying them with any type of herbicides, pesticides, or chemicals. So guess what? These large vacant lands that's growing so much in the east side of Detroit is now serving as pollinator habitats, and was contributing to boosting the native pollinator population. So these vacant lots can serve as low-cost sustainable projects to help not only with our environment, but to use as educational hubs to teach children about the importance of cross-pollination, our pollinators, and about sustainability.
That is fantastic. What's your proudest accomplishment with Detroit Hives so far?
I think right now, so many things to say. I don't know where to start. Our proudest accomplishment. Personally, this is me personally speaking, my proudest accomplishment would be going back to go to my alma mater, my high school, Mumford High School, and not only placing and donating a beehive there to educate students on apiology and beekeeping, but to also co-create a program called Be the Change. And with that, Nicole and I are prototyping a program to take inner city youth and transform them into community change agents where they can be the change in their community. So these youth no longer have to look up for city guidance, counseling help, or look for parents, or look for neighbors, or any type of large developers to help their community. They don't have to complain to the city. We want them to be the change and be the change within their community. And it's all comprised from the idea that we had. We saw an issue with the city of Detroit having so many vacant lots. We saw an issue addressing food deserts where there's a lack of fresh organic food within the community. We saw an issue with blight. We saw an issue with violence and injuries with these vacant lots. And we wanted to be the change ourselves. So adopting that model and creating a program where we can have children and youth be the change in their community, where they can manage vacant lots and manage these to create low-cost sustainable projects, I would say that will be my proudest achievement with Detroit Hives, because not only does this help our community, this helps our environment as well.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Nicole, what about you? What's your proudest accomplishment so far?
My proudest accomplishment is starting Detroit Hives and then watching how we've grown so far. So I think the whole thing and seeing this grow and develop as well. But one in particular is that I'm really fond of and proud of is introducing young girls to beekeeping and showing them how to eliminate the fear that they have with bugs or just honeybees. I was like that before, where I was scared of bees and I wasn't an outdoorsy person. But when I started studying honeybees, that fear transformed into love. And I love educating young girls and having them come out to the bee farm and exposing them to honeybees and beekeeping. So what we did when we had some girls come out and we helped them eliminate their fear and educate them on honeybees. And the girls actually love it. One thing that we actually did too was Barbie came out with a beekeeping Barbie. So those girls who came out to the bee farm, we actually got those Barbies and handed them out to the girls. And they loved it. So it was like an everlasting memory that they have, and helping them transform their fear and having them more be involved with honeybees and hands-on with bugs and being outside. So that's probably like my most proudest like moment.
And just to piggyback on that, that's why our three pillars, it starts with education, because that's what allowed us to grow a love for bees and pollinators, to be educated on them, between the difference between bees and wasps. We always had a miseducation on the difference between bees and wasps. And since we became more educated on it, it allowed us to share that education with others. And we believe that we can help make our communities definitely more greener, starting with education, but also community development and environmental sustainability.
Absolutely. And on that topic, can you explain the difference between a honeybee and a yellow jacket and a wasp?
Yeah, sure can. So visually, what you first see with the yellow jacket and a honeybee, yellow jacket is black and yellow. Honeybees are like a honey brown color and black. So those are the visible differences. Also with wasps, their diet initially is they eat other insects. They also are after your sugary drinks and your food.
Those are the carbohydrates.
Yep, those are the ones who are a little more invasive. So the ones that you see at picnics, at apple orchards, they're constantly trying to get into your food. They're like flies in a way, where flies are eating everything. With honeybees, they're pretty much vegan, as you would kind of say. They love nectar and pollen only. So their only interest is going into flower blossoms and retrieving the nectar and the honey. Nectar and pollen. And when they're out, they have no interest in humans. They're working so hard to bring that nectar and pollen in back to their hive that they just don't have any time to, like the wasps are, and where they're invasive.
Yeah, yellow jacket wasps are typically more invasive. They're always into your face. They after anything that you have, whether it's food, whether it's any type of sugary pot or substance. And then another apparent difference is that when they sting you, they can sting you over and over and over again, whereas a honeybee can only sting you one time. And this is because we have elastic skin. And when a honeybee stings us, their stinger get caught into our skin because they have a barbed stinger. And the only way to pull that stinger out is the honeybee has to rip apart their lower abdomen. And unfortunately, that caused the honeybee to die. And what's also known is that honeybees know this. They know that if they sting us, they can potentially lose their life. So a lot of times when we're working on the bee farm, we have had some honeybees that will fly into us. Where honeybees can fly up to 15 miles an hour, they can serve as a thumping type of hit to you, where opposed to if they don't want to sting you, they can thump you. And like I said, with yellow jackets, they know they don't lose their life, so they can sting you over and over again. And that's why they're so more so sting happy, where most people get stung with yellow jackets and, you know, repeatedly stung opposed to honeybees.
And also, as far as like structures in homes, with wasps and yellow jackets, they're all in the same family. They build a nest. So like the mummified looking paper cones that people see most commonly out in their yards or on their homes. Those are wasps or yellow jackets, and wasps actually build nests underground as well. With honeybees, all they build is honeycomb. That's the only thing that they build. They don't build an outside structure. So that's why we place them in hives, or sometimes you'll see them in trees, or sometimes they might have gotten into somebody's house. But all you see is honeycomb and them on the actual honeycomb. They don't build like a wasp nest like the wasps and yellow jackets do. So they actually are not the same thing as well. There are two different species that a lot of people don't know. I think just from illustrations, commercials, and TVs that because they're yellow and black and they fly and they have a stinger, that they get those confused all the time.
Yeah, that's all very good information to know. Thank you. And can you explain the importance of bees to our ecosystem?
Yeah. Bees are responsible for 1/3 of our food source. We need them to help pollinate most of the crops that we eat. If honeybees were to disappear or any type of pollinator or any other pollinator, like bees, like we would actually lose a lot of our food. Once the food is gone, we'll be following right behind them.
And just to add to that, like she said, mentioned, bees are definitely crucial to the pollination of our food. And without bees, a lot of our fruits and vegetables won't grow correctly, if not grow at all. And this can be a food shortage. So bees are responsible for a lot of our apple trees, our nuts, our fruit trees, and most of our vegetables. So this is definitely crucial as we grow in population on this earth, as well as having bees. You know, and bees have been around for over 400 million years, and they're responsible for help bringing us and help pollinating all the fruit trees and all the plants that we have today.
And what can we as individuals be doing to help save the bees?
You can start by doing actually the smallest things. When bees are traveling and foraging, they get thirsty just like we do. So what we do, when you can place a water source in your garden, so you can get like a really small container, place some stones or some rocks inside and fill it to just a point where the rocks are just up under the water is just up under the rock, so the bees can have a place to land and drink the water while they're out foraging. Another thing that people can do is plant a pollinator habitat with a little small section in their backyard, maybe in the front yard, where they grow native flowers that are great for honeybees. Another thing that they can do is, and there's another thing that they can do as well is in the spring, the first flowers to grow pretty much that are native is pretty much clover and dandelions. So I know a lot of people consider them as weeds, but here at Detroit Hives, we believe weeds
is the bees' knees.
So we tell people all the time, don't cut your grass so soon. Allow those clovers and dandelions to grow because those are the first foods for our pollinators. Not only just honeybees, but bumblebees, our mason bees, leaf cutter bees. So when they emerge in the springtime, they're hungry looking for food. So we tell people all the time, let your grass grow, let the clovers grow, let the dandelions grow, or preserve an area in your backyard or somewhere in your yard where you're, where you have food, a food source for our pollinators.
Or if you just can't absolutely stand those weeds on your lawn, it's better to mow the lawn instead of spraying chemicals. Do not spray chemicals on your lawn because it not only affects bees, it affects all living things, our pets, when we walk on and bring it back into the home, all living things. So those chemicals are definitely detrimental to the environment. So just cut the grass if you don't want the clovers or the dandelions.
Yeah. And so while he's talking about the chemicals, that is one of the main reasons for the decline in bees, because there are so many chemicals that are being sprayed on our grass, our flowers, our crops, our vegetables, and honeybees are actually taking that in and bringing it back to the hive, and it is killing the hive off. And that's why we have such a huge decline in and honeybees as well as native bees. We don't talk about the native bees as much because a lot of people, we don't keep them. We know about the decline because we keep honeybees, but honeybees are not the only ones that are affected by the use of chemicals. It is also our other native pollinators as well.
What advice do you have for someone who's interested in starting their own beehive?
My first advice is actually joining a local beekeepers association. Get connected with other beekeepers. And then after that, look and see if they have any beekeeping courses or classes. I say find and do much as research and education as you possibly can, because keeping honeybees is definitely a commitment. So the more you know about these creatures, the better. Also seek a class where it's more hands-on, so you can get a hands-on idea of how it is to beekeep and what to look for. I think that's important as well.
And can you start a beehive at any point in the year, or are bees really sensitive to cold weather?
Bees are not sensitive to cold weather. It's best to start up in the spring. So here in Michigan, our spring is, it depends, either like late April or the middle of April to like May, and you can start establishing a hive.
That's typically the best time to start a hive. That's when they're most active. Bees become typically less active as weathers go under 50 degrees. And this is when they're working to keep their hive productive and warm, where they can have food and make sure that the colony is doing well. So the best time to keep bees is early spring.
Yep, so start off in the early spring, so they're doing more work. So like you said before, when the temperatures are 50 degrees and up, they can go out foraging, looking for nectar and pollen, and establishing that hive so they can have food to start working. Now we're in the wintertime. So what bees do in the wintertime is they actually cluster up in a ball. They survive a little bit longer because they're less likely to work. They're working less. The queen sits in the middle and they'll rotate inside and out, keeping a temperature between 95 to 98 degrees. And what they're doing right now in the winter is just to stay warm and surviving and eating honey until the spring comes, and then they can release from the cluster and go immediately to work.
Yeah. And honey is their store of food. This is the way how they preserve the nectar when the flowers are all dried out during the fall and winter, or during the early winter. So honey is their stored preserved food.
Yeah, so honey is not just for human consumption only. It is actually the bees' stored food when there's no longer flower blossoms to visit.
They work very hard to keep that hive warm by vibrating wing muscles. And it creates friction with that heat. So they need that honey to keep their energy boosted. One thing about honey is that it's a natural energy booster. So that's what the honeybees need, is to keep their energy up. And also they need the enzymes and the protein and nutrients that's inside honey.
And also the carbohydrates. So it's an all-around superfood for the bees, and it's all-around superfood for humans as well.
And it never goes bad.
And so how do you responsibly extract honey from the hives?
So when you're getting ready to extract honey, you actually pull from the surplus hive boxes. So we're all about the conservation. So we make sure that the hive is left with enough honey to survive going into the winter and early spring. So we'll pull a few frames from the hive. We'll extract it. You can place it into an extractor, and then what it does is spin out the honey out of the comb, so you can reserve that honeycomb, so don't have to rebuild it and place it back into the hive.
And just to give you a little bit more depth, if you're looking about the most ethical way of extracting honey, is like she mentioned, the super boxes are just boxes full of honey, and sometimes there may be bees on that box. And what we use is either a gentle feather or a gentle brush just to sweep the bees off of that honey frame where it's not killing them or harming them. And then we safely place that into a box where we extract it later to our facility.
And what does Detroit Hive do with the honey that you're collecting?
Great question. We partner with local restaurants and businesses. We also host community tastings for the community to learn more about local raw honey, but also to taste and sample local raw honey. And that's pretty much it. So we have several restaurants we're working with to provide honey on their menu and to create a local honey barbecue sauce.
Very nice. Is there a way, when somebody's trying to purchase local honey, is there a way to tell if it's pure or if it's been diluted down?
There are some ways. For one, there's like a liquid passing test. And if you turn your honey bottle upside down and if the air bubbles hit the ceiling too fast, that's a clear indication that the honey is not real authentic honey. You know, it should be a slow process for those air bubbles to enter to the top, because honey has a very low water content, and the honeybees do a good job of evaporating 80% of that water outside of that honey. So it's definitely a slow process of seeing those air bubbles hit the top of that honey.
Over time, as honey sits, it starts to crystallize. So you'll notice in maybe jar of honey that you have, down at the bottom, there's like this hardened crystallization that's been going on. That's when you know you have real raw honey. And it hasn't been pasteurized or cooked and cooked out all of the pollen and the nutrition from the honey.
And so what's next for Detroit Hives, and how can we support your mission?
Great question. Right now, we've established a 5-year goal. And within our 5-year goal is to revitalize 45 properties within the city of Detroit, to establish a learning center where we can educate the community and local businesses on the importance of cross-pollination, but also build a network of hives, of 200 hives located within the Metro Detroit area.
Yeah, and right now we currently have 32 hives. So our mission in the next 5 years is to grow to 200. When we first started, because we've been around for 1 year and 7 months, we started off with 3 hives. So we're on a mission to get 200 hives.
And how someone can support us, definitely we're always looking for volunteers, but also monetary support can definitely help us out a long way. And they can visit our website at www.detroithives.com. or visit us on social media at Detroit Hives.
Perfect. Well, the work that you two are doing is so inspiring, and it was fantastic to be able to chat with you both. Thank you so much, Nicole and Tim.
No, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Hippie Haven podcast. Your support means the world to me. If you found value in today's episode, I encourage you to become a patron of the podcast. For just $5 a month, you can help me continue the educational work I'm doing here with all of my wonderful guests. And in return, I'll pick up a bag of trash in your honor. Visit patreon.com/ahippieinavan to support this podcast. I also have an exclusive community for the podcast over on Facebook. So if you want to connect with me and other like-minded people, just type Hippie Haven in the Facebook search bar and join our group. Thanks again, and stay tuned every Wednesday for the next episode.